Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. We're very happy to continue our regular feature, Ideas Matter, where we check in with the public humanities. It's our chance to check in with the humanities councils throughout our seven-state area to discuss important ideas and why they do indeed matter. Well, today we check in with Bro Adams, the chairman of the National Endowment of the Humanities, and speak with him about his new initiative to use humanities as the civic toolkit for working towards the common good. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Bro Adams to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So give us a sense of how this initiative came to be.
Well, when I arrived at the endowment in July, I started almost immediately thinking about what sort of tone and influence I might want to give to the work of the endowment over my time as chair, as most chairmen do historically. And I started thinking right away about something in the general domain of the public humanities, because I think it's important at this point in time in our history and in this point in time in the history of both the country and the humanities to demonstrate ways in which humanists, humanities resources, scholars, the work of the humanities can speak to broad issues of significance in the public sphere. So finding that intersection and doing things at any age that can inspire humanists to engage in work at that intersection became the focal point of my thinking. I arrived at this notion of the common good, the humanities in the public square, for a couple of reasons. The common good, I think, is a very resonant term. It's a deeply important concept in the history of political theory and of our own Republican tradition beginning at the founding, and was indeed a very important part of the thinking of those who were involved in that moment. And it's been periodically important in the history of this Republican democracy. And I like the way it frames this kind of work in the public humanities, because it suggests the possibility of something that unites us in a common good above and beyond our individual interests and our separate lives and worlds, and it really does point us toward community welfare and community well-being. That's kind of a fugitive concept these days. It's not something that we easily look to and talk about in public life. We're much better at talking about what divides us and right, where our differences are. But it seems to me that for people engaging in the humanities in the public sphere, it's got to be the orienting and sort of guiding principle of this discussion. More specifically, what the initiative will do is it will offer encouragement, support, financial support and encouragement and other kinds of encouragement for humanists to face the public and to take up some of the issues that surround us that I think the humanities have a lot to say about. How can the humanities illuminate the positive and worrisome ways in which information technology is affecting our individual and collective lives? How can the humanities help illuminate something that just came up recently in the political sphere, the debate over the appropriate balance of security and privacy? How can the humanities help enrich public understanding of the meaning and opportunities of democratic citizenship? How can the humanities help illuminate the legacies of recent wars and conflicts and help us understand better those experiences, and also how to help veterans incorporate themselves back into community life? Those are really big, important issues that the country is wrestling with. They don't have any obvious answers. And I raise the questions not because I have answers in mind, but because I think these kinds of questions can be powerful for the humanities and empowering of the humanities, but also that the humanities have a lot to contribute to these kinds of questions. So it's these public-facing issues that I want to encourage humanists to address within this broader context of the notion of the public good.
So with that term, the public good, and as you said a moment ago, that idea of uniting us. So we are far from united on what the common good is.
Well, the common good is, explicitly and by definition, something we wrestle with and we argue about, but it seems to me the argument is different. If we imagine ourselves to be aiming at that, and if we imagine ourselves as citizens to be engaging in that enterprise and exercise, I think the power of that concept and the power of that kind of inspiration is missing in a lot of our public discourse, not just political discourse, by the way, which is part of this, but not all of it. I think the sort of the guiding aim of the common good is not something that we're very familiar with and that we use very often. So within that context, I think it's helpful to keep that concept in mind as we face these public questions. And that's why I called it the common good.
When you look at the polarization that you were talking about and the conflict that we do have, is this a way of better understanding the issues and informing ourselves, or do you think that it can ultimately have a broader effect in through that understanding, having appreciation for another point of view and allowing us less conflict?
I think both. I mean, I really do think that humanists and humanities scholars, and both academic and independent, have a lot to say about the kinds of issues I have in mind. But I also think that the very exercise itself it has the prospect of making the divisions that do separate us less intense and, as you say, turn us toward one another in a different way, insofar as we understand ourselves to be citizens engaged in this common enterprise. I think that the theme of cultural sort of polarization is one of the things that humanists can talk about very meaningfully and help us understand better. What are the sources of that polarization? How have they become so prevalent in contemporary American culture? And how can that discussion itself contribute to the achievement of different and better forms of community and community understanding? So I think both are involved.
Does it alter the definition of humanities at all, in the sense of when we think of the programs that we know the NEH for, and we know our state humanities councils and what they do, does this initiative make them more political in a way?
I hope not. My aim is certainly not to make them more political. The questions that I have in mind and that we wrestle with, the questions that I talked about just a moment ago, are things that we're dealing with one way or another in this country. And one of the ways in which we deal with them is and are political. But there are forms of thought and reflection which have to be attached to these issues, where the humanities can be specifically very helpful and powerful. And so it's on that side of things, not on the political side of things, that I'm imagining this work to proceed. I should also say that these are questions, and I don't know what the answers are, or I should say that part of the exercise is to seek answers, but not to pretend to know what the answers are from the outset. So NEH's commitment to this is really to the questions, not to propositions or very specific solutions that might come, because we don't know what those solutions are, and that's a discussion that has to take place in the public sphere.
Talking about that public sphere, the subtitle of this initiative is the Humanities in the Public Square. Do we have a good infrastructure for that public square?
No, I don't think we do have a particularly good infrastructure for it, though, as you mentioned, the state humanities councils, I think, are one place in which these kinds of conversations and where public-facing humanists can present their work. Because, as you know, the humanities councils have lots of experience with making these kinds of reflections public and joining communities around these kinds of discussions. NEH, meanwhile, of course, is doing and will continue to do all kinds of things that are outside of this public-facing set of initiatives. We do fundamental research in the humanities, and we will always support that. We do sometimes highly technical work in preservation of cultural materials. we have lots of public programs in our own sphere that people are aware of that share humanities scholarship of all kinds with the public outside of these particular public questions. So we'll continue to do all of that because that's important to our mission. It's important to the humanities. The humanities is not one thing. It's certainly not this thing alone. But I think it's good for, particularly for people in the academy, to reorient themselves a little bit in this public-facing direction, because I think it speaks to the question of relevance in ways that will be compelling to students. And we need to demonstrate the relevance and the impact of the humanities in all kinds of ways.
You come from the world of higher education, and is that a good background for an NEH chair to have?
Well, so far, I think it is. It's good for a couple of reasons. One, there is an enormously important constituency for the humanities in colleges and universities, and of course, we're looked upon as a resource, an important resource for scholarship, particularly that goes on in the humanities. We're the biggest funder of humanities scholarship in the country, and we'll continue to play that role. So it gives me a sort of an acquaintance with that very important part of our world. But there's a really important connection, in addition, between the humanities and these large questions about the future of the humanities and education in a couple of ways. Most especially, I think, in the whole discussion about the liberal arts and the place of the liberal arts in college and university curricula, the place of the humanities in secondary education, which is a hugely important topic right now. So I think having a sense of the educational landscape is a very important thing to understand, because it is so closely related to the future of the humanities. And the humanities fate and future rely greatly on how we practice the humanities in those educational settings. So we're very interested in, as we do in our education program, helping high schools in the development of their own treatment of the humanities, and helping them continue to reinforce the message about the importance of the humanities in high school curricula. And we're, of course, very interested in the way colleges and universities are investing in the humanities, and will continue to work in that area as well.
Bro Adams is the chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The new initiative is called The Common Good, the Humanities in the Public Square. You can find out more by going to their website, neh.gov, neh.gov. Bro Adams, a great pleasure to have you on Ideas Matter this morning. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Great pleasure to have you with us. Again, to find out more information about the Common Good and about the NEH, you can go to neh.gov. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.